Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're tackling a real heavyweight case, Pennzoil versus Texaco. It went all the way to the Supreme Court.
It really did, and we've got some great material to work through. Insights from Case Cracked, detailed case notes, a standard brief, lots to unpack.
Definitely. Our goal here is to really get under the hood of this landmark dispute. It touches on, well, fundamental stuff like federalism,
yeah.
You know, the state versus federal court dynamic.
And a massive multi-billion dollar corporate deal that just went completely sideways.
Right. And then there's this key legal concept, Younger abstention. It's really central.
Uh-huh. Basically, when federal courts have to sort of step back and let state courts handle things.
Exactly. And for anyone listening who's, you know, maybe a law student or just keen on getting up to speed on major legal principles quickly, this case is pure gold.
It really is. It hits so many important points in civil procedure and that whole state-federal court relationship.
Okay, so let's set the scene. The core conflict, in a nutshell.
Well, you had Pennzoil. They thought they had a deal, a handshake agreement, basically, to buy Getty Oil.
The controlling interest.
The controlling interest, yeah. But then Texaco comes along.
The spoiler.
Kind of, yeah. Texaco swoops in, offers more money, and Getty takes Texaco's offer instead.
Which led Pennzoil to sue Texaco. Not Getty, interestingly, but Texaco.
Right. They sued Texaco in Texas state court for something called tortious interference.
Meaning?
Meaning Pennzoil claimed Texaco deliberately messed up their existing agreement with Getty, that they intentionally caused Getty to break the deal.
And the stakes were just enormous from the get-go.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get to the numbers, but let's just say it triggered this incredibly complex legal fight across both state and federal courts.
Okay, let's break down the facts a bit more. Pennzoil's initial deal.
They reached an agreement, seemingly, to acquire that controlling slice of Getty Oil. The price was set at $110 per share.
And they had key shareholders on board.
Yep. Backed by important Getty shareholders, Gordon Getty and the Getty Museum, I believe. They even announced it publicly. Looked pretty solid.
But then Texaco enters the picture.
Right. Texaco puts a much higher offer on the table, $128 a share. Significantly more attractive financially.
And Getty's board.
Well, they accepted Texaco's offer, which, you know, effectively torpedoed the Pennzoil deal.
Understandably, Pennzoil was not happy.
Not happy at all. That's when they filed that lawsuit we mentioned in Texas state court, claiming tortious interference with their contract.
And the Texas jury, what did they find?
They sided emphatically with Pennzoil. And the damages they awarded were frankly unbelievable at the time.
This is the big number, right?
This is the big one. $7.53 billion in actual compensatory damages, plus another $3 billion in punitive damages.
Wow. So total judgment over $10.5 billion.
Exactly. Over $10.5 billion. It was the largest civil verdict in U.S. history at that point. Just astronomical.
Okay, so Texaco gets hit with this massive judgment. What happens next? Appealing something that huge must be complicated.
Extremely. Under Texas law at the time, to appeal that judgment, Texaco would have needed to post a bond, basically a security deposit.
For the full amount.
For the full amount of the judgment plus interest. We're talking well over $10 billion, maybe $11 or $12 billion.
Which they couldn't do.
Right. Texaco argued they simply couldn't come up with that kind of cash or collateral. It would potentially bankrupt them just to appeal.
So they got creative. Where did they go?
This is where the federal court system comes in. Texaco filed a new lawsuit, this time against Pennzoil, in federal court. Specifically, the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York.
And what was their argument in federal court?
They argued that the Texas judgment itself, and particularly the massive bond requirement to appeal it, violated their federal constitutional rights.
Which rights specifically?
Primarily, their 14th Amendment rights to due process and equal protection under the law. They were saying the Texas procedure was fundamentally unfair in this situation.
And did the federal court buy that argument initially?
Well, the district court did. It actually granted Texaco a preliminary injunction.
Meaning it stopped Pennzoil from collecting.
Exactly. It temporarily blocked Pennzoil from taking any action to enforce that massive Texas judgment while the federal case proceeded.
And that went up on appeal, too.
Yes. Pennzoil appealed that injunction to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. But the Second Circuit actually upheld the district court's decision. They agreed with the injunction.
And they specifically addressed Younger abstention.
They did. The Second Circuit explicitly said that Younger abstention, that principle of federal courts staying out of state cases, did not apply here.
So at this stage, it looked like the federal courts were definitely willing to step in and review the Texas proceedings.
It certainly seemed that way. But then the case went higher.
To the U.S. Supreme Court.
Correct. And the Supreme Court saw things very differently.
What did they decide?
They reversed the lower federal courts. The Supreme Court held that the federal courts should have abstained under the Younger Doctrine.
Okay, so this is the absolute core of the legal issue here. Younger abstention. Let's unpack that.
Right. The central question becomes, when can federal courts intervene in ongoing state court cases? It's a fundamental question about federalism.
And Younger abstention, coming from that Younger v. Harris case in 71, provides the framework, right?
Exactly. Younger sets out a general rule, a strong presumption against federal interference.
Under what conditions should federal courts abstain, according to Younger?
Well, there are basically three key conditions that need to be met for Younger abstention to apply.
Okay, what's the first?
First, the state proceeding has to be ongoing and judicial in nature. It can't be purely legislative or administrative. It needs to be happening within the state's court system.
Seems like that was clearly met here. Texas state court litigation.
Absolutely. No dispute there. Second condition.
The state needs to have a significant interest in the subject matter of that proceeding.
Okay, like enforcing its own laws or judgments.
Precisely.
Things like criminal prosecutions, enforcing court orders, regulating licensed professionals areas where states traditionally have strong interests.
And the third condition.
This one's critical. The state proceedings must offer an adequate opportunity for the person raising the federal claim, in this case, Texaco, to actually raise those federal constitutional challenges within the state system.
So the state court has to be a place where you can argue your federal rights are being violated.
Exactly. If the state court process itself prevents you from making that argument, then Younger might not apply. But if the opportunity is there, the federal court should generally step back.
And the idea behind all this is?
It's rooted in principles of comity and federalism. Respect for state functions, you know?
Comity meaning? Like politeness between court systems?
Sort of, yeah. It's more a legal principle of mutual respect. Federal courts respecting the capabilities and legitimacy of state courts as co-equal sovereigns within our system, avoiding unnecessary friction.
So how did the Supreme Court apply those three Younger factors to the Penzoil case?
Well, they went through them. First, ongoing state judicial proceeding. Check. Clearly, the Texas case was still technically ongoing because the appeals process hadn't been fully exhausted, even if enforcement was the immediate issue.
Okay. Second, significant state interest.
Check again. The court said Texas obviously has a significant interest in enforcing the judgments of its own courts.
Yep.
That's fundamental to any judicial system. And also in providing a forum for resolving large commercial disputes like this one.
Right. Contract and tort law are typically state matters.
Exactly. And then the third prong, adequate opportunity to raise federal claims in state court.
This seems like the sticking point for Texaco.
It was their main argument, but the Supreme Court disagreed. They concluded that Texas's appellate courts were capable of hearing and deciding Texaco's constitutional arguments about the due process implications of the bond requirement.
So the Supreme Court basically said, you can make these arguments in Texas courts.
Essentially, yes. They pointed out that Texaco hadn't even really tried to exhaust all its options within the Texas system regarding the bond.
What options did they mean?
The court specifically mentioned that Texas had an open courts provision in its state constitution. Texaco hadn't attempted to use that provision to argue that the massive bond requirement effectively denied them access to the state appellate courts.
So the court felt Texaco jumped to federal court too soon.
That was definitely a major part of the reasoning. The message was, you need to pursue your state remedies first. Give the state system a full chance to address the potential constitutional issues before you ask a federal court to intervene.
It really emphasizes that idea of exhausting state remedies.
Absolutely. It's a fundamental principle tied into Younger. Don't run to federal court unless the state system is truly inadequate or unavailable for your federal claim.
Now, you mentioned the court wasn't entirely unified. Even though they agreed on the outcome abstention, there were concurrences.
That's right. The justices agreed federal courts should abstain, but they took slightly different paths to get there, highlighting some interesting legal nuances.
Why do these concurring opinions matter?
They're important because they show the ongoing debate about the scope of doctrines like Younger and the precise balance between federal oversight and state autonomy. Different justices emphasize different aspects.
Okay, let's take Justice Scalia's concurrence. What was his focus?
Justice Scalia agreed Younger was the right answer, but he seemed keen to distinguish it clearly from another doctrine called Rooker-Feldman.
Rooker-Feldman? What's that about?
Very simply put, Rooker-Feldman generally prevents lower federal courts from acting as appellate courts for state court judgments. You can't just take your state court loss to a federal district court and ask them to overturn it.
So Scalia wanted to make sure Younger wasn't confused with that.
Exactly. He emphasized that Younger is about interfering with ongoing state proceedings, particularly before state appeals are exhausted. He seemed concerned about federal courts getting involved in what he saw as state procedural matters, like the bond, while the state case was still live. He stressed the state courts as the proper forum.
Okay. And Justice Brennan, he had some reservations, you said.
He did, joined by Justice Marshall. Brennan noted that Younger originally came from the criminal context, where the state's interest is arguably strongest. He expressed caution about applying it too broadly in civil cases between private parties.
But he still agreed abstention was right here.
Yes. He acknowledged the specific circumstances, particularly the state's strong interest in its own judgment enforcement procedures, made Younger applicable in this instance. But he added a crucial point.
Which was...
He stressed that federal courts still needed to be vigilant in ensuring state post-judgment procedures actually do provide due process. So abstain here, yes, but keep a watchful eye on whether state procedures are fundamentally fair.
A bit of a warning shot, maybe?
You could see it that way. A reminder that abstention isn't a blank check for states to ignore constitutional rights in civil cases.
And then Justice Blackmun suggested a different abstention doctrine altogether.
Right. Justice Blackmun thought maybe Pullman abstention would have been a better fit.
Pullman abstention? How's that different from Younger?
Pullman abstention applies when a federal case involves an unclear question of state law, and resolving that state law question might eliminate the need to decide the federal constitutional issue.
So the federal court waits for the state court to clarify its own law.
Exactly. The federal court essentially pauses, abstains temporarily, to let the state court speak first on the ambiguous state law. Blackmun felt there might have been ambiguities in Texas law about the bond provision that the Texas court should have clarified first.
Interesting. So the same result, federal court steps back, but for potentially different reasons, highlighting different aspects of state law versus federal rights.
Precisely. It shows that deciding when to abstain is complex, and there are different doctrinal tools and rationales involved, reflecting that constant balancing act in our federal system.
Okay, let's pivot to the aftermath. The Supreme Court says... Federal courts must abstain. What were the immediate real-world consequences for Texaco?
Well, the big one was bankruptcy. Facing that $10.5 billion judgment, with the federal court injunction lifted and unable to post the massive Texas bond to continue appeals easily.
They were cornered.
Completely cornered. Texaco filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. It was a stunning development for such a huge corporation.
And the bankruptcy forced a settlement.
It did. To resolve the bankruptcy and finally end the legal war, Texaco and Pennzoil negotiated a settlement.
For how much? Not the full $10.5 billion, presumably.
No, significantly less, but still enormous. Texaco ultimately agreed to pay Pennzoil $3 billion to settle the claim.
Still a massive win for Pennzoil, but a huge reduction for Texaco.
A huge reduction, yes. But the bankruptcy itself had massive ripple effects, too.
Beyond the money changing hands, what's the lasting legal impact? What precedent did Pennzoil v. Texaco really cement?
It powerfully reinforced the Younger Doctrine and the limitations on federal courts interfering in state judicial matters. It sent a strong message about respecting state court processes, especially when states have a significant interest and provide avenues to raise federal claims.
So deference to state courts is the main takeaway.
Deference, yes, but qualified deference. Federal courts shouldn't intervene unless those narrow exceptions apply, like bad faith prosecution, harassment, or a state law being flagrantly unconstitutional, or if the state forum is truly inadequate. But absent those, state courts get the first and often final say.
Got it. Now, for our listeners, especially law students thinking about practice, what are the key practical lessons here?
Okay, several things. First, on the transactional side, it's a huge lesson in contract drafting. The ambiguity around whether Pennzoil and Getty actually had a binding contract was central. Clear, robust agreements minimize risks, like tortious interference claims.
Good point. What about for litigators?
Exhaustion, exhaustion, exhaustion. This case is Exhibit A for why you must pursue all viable state court remedies and appeals before trying to jump to federal court, especially when challenging state procedures or judgments. Yeah. Don't make Texaco's mistake.
Right. The Supreme Court really hammered that point.
They did. And finally, just understanding that Younger isn't just for criminal cases. It applies broadly in civil contexts where important state interests are involved. You need to analyze Younger whenever you're thinking about federal intervention in a state matter.
So looking back, this case really is much more than just, you know, two oil companies fighting over a deal.
Oh, definitely. It's a fundamental statement about trust in state courts, about the structure of American federalism, and about where power lies in our dual judicial system.
It forces us to think about that balance.
Absolutely. And it leaves us with a really important question to ponder, I think.
Which is?
Well, if the general rule is federal courts should stay out, under what specific, truly compelling circumstances should federal intervention be warranted? What level of failure or inadequacy in a state system would actually justify a federal court stepping in, overriding that principle of comity? Where is that line?
That's a really crucial question to consider, especially today. Something for everyone to think about.
Definitely.
This deep dive gave us a solid look at Younger abstention through a really high-profile lens. But the conversation around federalism and court power continues. We definitely encourage you to explore other cases where Younger comes up and the ongoing debates about its application. Thanks for joining us.